Thank you. How are you guys doing? Good. Oh, just made me so happy. There's that initial moment. It's like, oh, what's it going to be like? How are we going to feel? There was like a great comedian last night, and then they put me up on stage. So if you were here, I'm not that funny. So I apologize. But we should have a little bit of fun. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Michael Siebert. I'm the student ministries pastor here. So I get to hang out with Hunter and Mark, and we invest in like the 14 to 24 year olds, which are incredibly significant. They are important. We were all there once, or most of us were there once, right? At some point. There's a few of you here that are not. Not too long ago, we were sitting around talking, and we were excited about this kind of concept of going, hey, we'd love to have the opportunity to kind of speak and share. And so they, as we sat down and kind of offered different opportunities, and we were going through Jonah, I got a handful of verses that I think are going to be a little interesting. So I kind of say that because I want to prep you a little bit. You might, it could get interesting. Does that work? Does that work? Okay. I'll read it, and then you might see why I say that. So we're in Jonah 4. We've been cruising through, following Jonah. It's been this great experience. And then we get to this weird moment in Jonah 4:1, where I feel like it's not necessarily out of character for Jonah, but just like for us, and this learning moment is kind of interesting. And it says, to Jonah, this seemed very wrong. And he became angry. He prayed to the Lord, isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? That is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me to die than to live. Huh? You guys read that with me, right? This should be pretty interesting today. I feel like we have a lot to unpack. I feel like in a small amount of verses, it actually says a lot more than it feels. In this moment, you're like, I really feel like I look at Jonah and I'm like, come on, dude. You seem like you're overreacting a little bit. Like, it just feels like you've gone a little too far. You're like, okay, look, you saved some people and I didn't like it, so I'm out. Bring it down a few notches, you know? It's like talking to a teenager sometimes, right? Fair? Yes, maybe. But I did want to point something out, and I want to hold this kind of the whole time as we navigate and we process through these verses. I wanted to hold on to something that I think is incredibly important, and it's probably the place that really finds the most intense value in this, but it's easy to get lost. And it happens in verse 2. And it says, you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love. A God who relents from sending calamity. I'm an ESV if you guys were trying to figure out why calamity was in there. But the breakdown is this moment that I really want to live in, is that we have a God who is, he's willing to take some time. And I think that's incredibly important for us as we look at ourselves, as we try to navigate, as we try to unpack all of this. I think it's really important for us to remember that we have this God who he's relentless, and we talk about he's driven, he cares, he'd do anything and everything for us. And in that moment, anything and everything for us is slow. It takes time. I'm sure some of you have prayed and waited and waited and waited. I had a friend at one moment, she got to go on this mission trip And she had prayed that God would use her and do this amazing stuff. And she just couldn't feel. She's going to Ethiopia and she gets to like bring sight to people. She's going there for an optometrist like retreat and people are going to come and get glasses. And she was really excited. But there was this thing inside of her where she just feels like she wasn't doing enough. She was like, and I know that all seems a little weird, but it's sometimes like that for us, right? We might be doing everything, but she just wasn't experiencing what she was hoping to experience. And she goes there, she partners up with this church, and she comes back feeling the exact same. She's like, I did all this stuff, a bunch of people got glasses, it was really exciting, and it was what it was. And then she gets this crazy email from the church. The head pastor of the church that she was partnered with goes, we had been praying for 30 years that somebody would partner up with us. And you were that. And all of a sudden she had this crazy moment where I think it mixed up her whole circumstance and scenario where she was sitting there thinking that the glasses were going to be the big important part for her. That she was going to see God work. And she ended up realizing that like, the silly moment that she had taken for granted that she was going to go over there and that encouragement that she was able to bring to somebody who had been praying for 30 years. I'm hoping I haven't been a Christian 30 years. And I'm hoping I have 30-year-long prayers. Like, not that I don't want him to answer. Like, I'll take it. You can. But like, I'm praying for my brother even currently right now who's not a Christian. And it's ongoing. But it's slow. It's slow. I just want to start there. I want to start there and live there. It's not actually even one of my points. It doesn't even, but it's just kind of the important structure underneath where we're going to head. Today we're going to talk about loving other people. It's actually my first, yeah. In the core of this, you have this weird like battle that Jonah is having where he hears this call that God has in his life to go to Nineveh. And he's like, I don't want to have anything to do. And we've unpacked who the Ninevites were to him. I mean, it wasn't exactly go and hang out with your buddies and tell them about Jesus. You know, it was definitely that moment where he's like, yeah, I don't like those guys. Not only do I not like them, they are like the worst. They're let's just not there. And he shows up and he, I mean, obviously he runs away first and we've unpacked all of that stuff. And we get to this moment where he finally goes, okay, I'm going to go anyways. I'm going to go, right? He tells Nineveh, and Nineveh has this radical change go on inside of them. And it's almost ground up, right? It gets to the king last. So it's not even one of those moments where he shows up and he's like, let me have the king hook it up. I'll tell him he'll make them Christian. Or, I mean, not Christian, but follow Jesus. I mean, you fill in all those gaps. Good luck. But you get the idea of it, right? He doesn't do that. He's in there, and he's just like, okay. And this is a moment, and I love this, that Cliff pointed out last week, where they didn't believe Jonah. They believed God. Let's just keep removing Jonah from these circumstances, right? So I want to first point out the others. I wouldn't, if you've been a Christian or been around church or heard the Jesus stuff at all, in any way, shape, and form, I would say that loving other people is kind of at the core quality of what we would assume that we should be. There's this call out, just in general, to love others. It comes in all different forms. Jesus makes claims for it. You get it in Good Samaritan stories and just in so many actions of people showing up and caring and doing that investment that matters so much. But others, how we identify, I think, matters. In Jonah, it's kind of this easy moment where Jonah is sitting there and he's looking at this group of people who he just doesn't like. He's out. He doesn't want anything to do with him. But I want to unpack others a little bit more. I I think it's easy for us to have people who are not us. I think we actually do this pretty regularly. And maybe we do it in an extreme sense. Maybe you've been a Christian for a while and you have this moment like, and I think this is kind of Jonah growing up. He'd grown up in this environment where God was surrounding who he was and what was happening. And he's inundated in temple worship, and he gets this opportunity to experience God. And there's these moments, whether you unpack it in Romans 5:10, it says, if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through his death. While we were enemies, like, I just want to point out, this is Jonah's feeling about the Ninevites, right? He's like, enemies. God cares, right? If you go down to James 4, right? You couple verses over, a couple books over, you adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Once again, this moment of like, it even goes on a little bit farther. It says, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Now if you've unpacked that at all, there is this easy moment of creating an other, right? And you go, okay, that totally makes sense. And this is almost this moment where you see Jonah and you're like, ah, come on, dude. Like, you're just supposed to love your enemies. But I think there's actually more to unpack for us. I think others gets a little bit more deep than we like to let it. I kind of want to reframe it to a little bit more of a controlled environment. I have little kids. I have a 3-year-old. I just turned 4. I have a 4-year-old. You got to experience that with me right now. And a 6-year-old who wishes he was 7 or thinks he's 7. It's fantastic. And they are, my 7-year-old is super imaginative. He is just running around. Everything is this, like, he's creating things and inviting you to participate in his newly created world of something or other. It's always different and always takes on different forms and whatever it is, whether he's at soccer practice or just playing outside or in the house. Everything is like this created imaginative like world. Super fun, super exciting. And my 4-year-old is active. That's enough. Like, the 7-year-old is regularly being like, hey, let me go, please. I would like to walk or move or not be tackled on the ground. Please let me move. We took them to soccer practice yesterday, and there's definitely this moment where you show up at soccer practice, and it happens so early, it's kind of interesting, because there was the good at soccer kids, the not good at soccer kids, you know, the kids who, I mean, I love my 7-year-old, he's so adorable, but he was just like, I'm gonna play over here, you know, like, I'm all, kick the ball. Promise. It'll be so fantastic. The ball is going to be awesome. And he'll come back, and he likes to play and do that stuff. But there was definitely this moment where, like, you get this divided moment. And this happens in our whole life, right? I mean, as much as we've associated with things that we are and things that we aren't, some of it is to help us identify ourselves, but it also identifies people who are not us. And this is where I want to show a little bit of this danger that we've come into. I mean, college, it only gets worse, whether it's sports or whether it's just kind of the circumstances that we live in. And at this point, I mean, it gets really complicated, from gender to race to talent to title. If you've accomplished something, you can become the other. Or maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's just you found your little, like, crew and group. This probably plays out really well for me as I work with students, right? I remember the moments when I was younger and working with students, I was kind of one of them, even though I was a few years older. I started as a youth pastor, doing youth ministry work when I was 20 years old. It's been a while. I am not one of them. They remind me all the time. The other day, some of them jokingly was like, hey, dad. And I was like, thank you. It's like, can I at least be uncle? Like, I'm just like, praying for anything. What is this? How does this all play out? I think it's really important for us to understand that we put people in other pretty easily and quickly. That if you wanted to actually figure out who is not you, you have an array of things to classify. Number two, finding common ground is incredibly important when there's another, right? And here, I'm going to give you a little bit of a secret here. I don't think common ground is for them. I think it's for us. Finding common ground is way more for me and my heart and who I am and what I'm doing. And you don't find this in Jonah. You don't find Jonah being like, you know what? Maybe they're kind of like... For Jonah, he has this moment where he's just created them as others, right? I was doing some research as I'm trying to unpack this, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, like, I have a very small amount of verses that are incredibly pungent, and what does that mean and look like? And as I start to realize that Jonah has placed the Ninevites someplace that he is just unwilling to associate with, even after they've been redeemed, he still lands them as others, in something else, in something he cannot, he's just like, but I'm me, and I'm doing my own thing, and I'm an Israelite, and at any point in time, maybe they'll come back and overtake us or keep us down, or it doesn't matter, I just know. I started to unpack this because as I'm looking, I come across this survey that was done and then this brain study that was done off of this survey that ended up kind of unpacking empathy. How many of us like movies? I'm actually not incredibly a good movie goer, but my wife loves movies. I'm regularly coming home to her crying to a movie, which some of you, okay. Now for the rest of us, why would you do that to yourself? Like, why are you crying? Why did you? She's like, it feels so good. I was like, does it though? Like, this is tissue tears. Like, you're like in. You're like committed to this moment. And I think there's some healthiness to this, right? I mean, it is so good for us to feel what somebody else feels. God even draws us out, right? He says, mourn with those who mourn, right? Celebrate with those who celebrate. He calls us to be with. To take down some of those other walls. But there was something that was even more interesting, and it was almost glazed over in the study a little bit. And they talked about how empathy is one thing, and it actually happens in one place of our brain, but there's a whole nother part in our brain that leads us to action. They weren't necessarily friends. They might talk, but they're not like... And they were finding, as they were researching, that the common scenario was that if you had empathy with somebody who was an us, with somebody who you identified with, you would take action. But if they were something else, if they were an other, you didn't. I used to work at a church that was kind of on this homeless route. And they walked regularly through our campus. And we'd have to have somebody, a pastor on campus, like constant, that would field all of the asks and the questions. My second week working at this place, they handed me the phone and kind of said, you have to just live here all week. You'll be fine. Don't worry. You can go home and sleep, but like come back and you're here and people are just going to come in. I was like, okay, what does that even mean? And you're sitting down, and people would sit down and be like, give me my $20, because that's what this church had done for years and years. It would just hand out gift cards, and it was fine. It had kind of like put a Band-Aid on a situation that was like going on. And I got frustrated with it. Like, it didn't even take me the whole week before I was just like, I just sat down and said no. And that person did not respond well. I'm glad they didn't flip the table, but it felt like they might have. You know, I was just like, I might die here. Okay. And my response was no, but I'll have lunch with you. Jack in the Box across the street, like, why don't we go sit down? I want to hear your story. He stomped out. He was super mad. He left. He came back next week, walked in, and said, hey, I have an appointment with Michael to have lunch. We did not set an appointment, by the way. I was like, who is this random human? I walked out, and I was like, I think he looks familiar. I was like, hi? I'd seen enough people that, like, he'd almost disappeared into, like, just, and we sit down, and we go to Jack in the Box, we sit down, I buy him some food, we're having a conversation, he's like, you know, and he goes, you guys, and I was like, hold on, me guys, like, what does that even mean? We started unpacking this, like, how he views the world. At one point, we got to this thing where he didn't mind stealing from others, because they had no faces, no names, they didn't matter, they were insignificant. And maybe we don't do it, maybe we're not that extreme, maybe it's not that intense that we've just blanked people out, but how often have we just pushed people aside and missed who they are because we've just made them something else? There's this beautiful moment as I end up going to lunch. One of the pastors that I got to work with was like, he's like, I try to stop and constantly have conversation because I think it matters for me. And I was like, what? He was like, did the lunch change you? I was like, so much. He was like, exactly. It freaked me out. I was like, caring did something to me, finding common ground, it made things different than I expected it to be. Common ground matters a whole bunch as I'm working with students. The older I get, the more I realize that common ground becomes this thing, and we could kind of find it here, but I want to unpack it a little bit. It says this in 1 Corinthians 9:19-23. It says, for though I am free from all, I've made myself a servant to all that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I become a Jew in order to win the Jews. To those under the law, I become as under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I become as one outside of the law, not being outside of the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside of the law. To the weak, I become weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. Now, I want to unpack this a little bit, only because I think that there's this quick moment of taking that in and going, totally, come, become whoever to everybody, yeah, okay, that's great. And there's this interesting, weird moment where it's like, there seems like there needs to be a line somewhere, right? I mean, I'm not going to go get drunk with people who are going and getting drunk to, like, make it okay for myself, you know, and being like, well, I'm winning people for Jesus, or drugs, or whatever it is, or whatever is just like, take this scenario. I mean, if you watch, he says a few things that are, I think, are really impactful. That he points out some moments that, like, just be. Can I be honest with you? Straight, just real honest moment. I have a brother who is not Christian. Not Christian. I didn't grow up in a Christian household. I became a Christian in college. And I have had so many incredible conversations with my brother. He was here like 3 weeks ago. He'd shown up. He lives in Southern California. We are not the same. We are not the same. He's struggling with tons of things he has picked up along the way because Jesus isn't in his life. My common ground looks like this. It probably plays out way more like Daniel. If you know Daniel, Daniel is this character in the Bible who actually gets grabbed into captivity. The Babylonians have taken over and they grab in all the like healthy, good, like men and we're like, we're gonna make you us. And he goes through this journey of over and over again. If you haven't read Daniel, I would encourage you to do it. It's this interesting book that at first glance seems totally crazy because if somebody took over my country, my people, my stuff, and then took me and wanted to make me one of them. It seems like he has two good options, right? Full rebellion. Bring it on. Let's go. For Jesus, I'm going down, right? Riot. Let's do this. Or he sneakily submits until he gets the moment to take out the king or whoever, right? I mean, these are some great options. Daniel chooses none of them. No, Daniel's approach is, I'm going to find the well-being of Babylon. I'm going to care about them like they are of value and important. And when it rubs up against, when it pushes against my beliefs, I will stand up strong. But I care because I want their best. I've been trying to live that out with my brother. And there's this amazing moment that have been happening after 20 some years of talking about God with him. And he's like, there's this interesting moment where I'll try to see how far you'll go or what will happen or how does this play out. This is probably too dear to me. Because the first Christians I ever met were in high school. And as I met them, they did the church on Sunday thing, and they were good people. But it was a little light. It was Jesus light. It was like, hey, I'm really Christian on Sunday, and I'm not Christian. Did you catch that one? Yeah, sorry about the double. Like, double negatives totally messes everything up. But, like, you know what I'm saying. Because they were Christian-ish. I ended up having a little bit of a tough moment with one of the pastors there. Not because I was doing anything necessarily bad, but because in this moment, he was really worried about some of his students. So he got in my face because he was worried that I'm not a Christian. I'm hanging out with these 12 people who are trying to figure out life. And I am definitely the bad influence. Even though I wasn't really that bad of a kid, I was definitely like bad enough. Don't go where you don't need to. I started dating one of the girls and he was really, really... He got mad at me, actually. He pulled me into his office and told me how horrible I was and that we should not date. And don't date, like, don't flirt to convert. I think that was what was kind of trying to, missionary dating, however you want to say it. That's what was trying to happen. That it was not effective. That it's not how that all played out very well. Because by that youth pastor getting in my face, it actually convinced me that I didn't want my 12 friends to go to church anymore. It took me about a year and a half to convince them to stop going. I didn't use anything super creative. You know what I did? I got them busy. It's super easy to keep people busy on Sunday. You know what you want to do? Rock climbing, kayaking, you name it, I can figure it out. And it should happen because the best time when nobody else is doing it, Sunday morning during church. I remember the moment that I would just try all the time. And we'd go sometimes and then we wouldn't. And about a year and a half later, I remember the moment when we were hanging out. We woke up early, we were hanging out on Sunday morning. And I was like, I realized I hadn't planned anything. So I was like, we're going to go to church today, fine, whatever. And they go, we haven't been in so long, who cares? And I was like, what? I would never do that now. I feel so bad, like even cheering about that like moment. But I say that in the reality of like, we've got to be honest with ourselves about what we're doing and where we're going. The common ground was about me. It was about me realizing and finding out and figuring out, like, that all of us are in this together. I like to back out of all of this in a way that makes sense because I want it to feel like this. God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, all of us. Sometimes it's the backing out and not like slowly isolating all of the categories because I'm good at soccer or this or that or tall or short or whatever it is. Young, old, seven, without teeth. It's my 7-year-old. He's got his other teeth, just not the front four. Super funny. Romans 3:23, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Jonah, what's up, yo? Why do you think you're better than them? You get this other moment here. Where in Mark 12:30, it says this, 30 and 31. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your mind, with all of your strength. And then the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these. Know them. This might be the most beautiful moment of why we need to eliminate the other. Maybe that's why he phrased it that way, where he was like, you need to love them as yourself, because all of a sudden, the second people become the us, you'll fight harder. You'll go the extra mile. You'll walk really far. The last one's a little bit easy in my observations, and it's meet them where they're at. I mean, this came straightforward with the Jonah circumstance and scenario. He has this moment where he's sent, right? I always want to be really careful that the invite is enough. Showing people, going where people are at, meeting them where they're at is so significant. Whether it's Jesus at a well, whether it's Paul walking into a city, Jonah being sent. Some of the greatest pastoral moments I've ever experienced have been sitting outside a coffee shop close to Bella Vista and having students just stop by and having some great conversations. They've been going to a skate park with some of my students and watching them try to navigate how to be a Christian while other people are definitely not. And unpacking it and watching them gather friends and be like, there's something about this that is way better than anything you have in your life. Might be what you're made for. I watched a middle school student get in the face of a 26, 27-year-old bully at a skate park to protect other kids from him. I was like, Matt, bad idea, don't do that. Come back here. He was like, I'm taking care of this. I was like, oh, man. I was like, what's Matt's emergency phone call number? That 24, I don't know how old the guy actually was, but that guy ended up hanging out with us months later. All because of Matt. Matt got in his face, met him where he was at, and then started inviting him to come and skate with us. I was like, this is a horrible idea. Why are you doing this? My job is to keep you safe, and you picked the big bully kid? Like, really? We started bringing sodas just to have reasons to hang out and chat and converse with people. Hey, we have a big giant tub of sodas. Anybody want to come and hang out with us? I was like, this is brilliant. There's a couple of warnings, though, that I think are incredibly important. I wrote them down as observations from Jonah. And it's kind of in Jonah's response and reaction. These ones scare me. I'll be totally honest. They scare me because I think it's so easy to get here. They scare me because I think the longer we get comfortable and the more we kind of figure out how to like navigate and do the dance of Christianity, the more these become comfortable and easy. I see this Jonah who goes and sees God work in such a powerful way and then comes back and isn't changed at all. My first observation is you need to let God change you in the process. It is not enough to go do something. But you have to be willing to be different afterwards. Jonah gets this moment where this is profound for him to see Nineveh like radically changed. And he comes back and is just he's mad at God. He goes at God, he's like, I knew you'd do that. Save people? Like, wait. Like how he saved you? And me? And all of us? It's so easy to be in our own little world and bubble in a way that makes us never see somebody else that needs to be saved the way that God does. Never create opportunities for ourselves to be part of what God's going to do in people's lives. I've been in youth ministry for 20 years. It's totally selfish. Because God keeps changing me and who I am in the process and re-seeing the world in a way that I don't think I could do without seeing it through a high schooler's eyes as they get so excited about seeing life change in a friend or in the world. They are ambitious and passionate. They care. When you harness that and unlock it, it is like nothing. It's so exciting. I also have plenty of friends who stopped letting that in and aren't changed. Maybe even to the point of being numb and frustrated and bitter about the work that it takes to accomplish anything. I want to invite you to not let the change stop. James puts it like this, be doers of the word and not hearers only, and by that deceiving yourself. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. I just want to encourage you to let God change you. One more thing. And this one's probably even more dangerous. Don't return to your old ways. This is subtle. This is the quiet moment, right? This is the moment that you almost miss and don't notice. When you look back and you're like, well, I remember these moments when I was going for it and giving it my all and I had everything up in front of me and then I came back from Nineveh, God working, doing, changing dramatically. I mean, a whole city, capital, in charge of like the growing world, and I come back and I'm happy with my old me. To the point that I go back to grumbling. I go back to being grumpy. I go back to missing what God has in store for me. Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good, acceptable, and perfect. I just want to end with reading the verse again. It's short, but I think there's a lot in it. A lot of warning. And something that we could almost miss. We could easily miss the impact that God wants to have in us and through us. And we could turn into Jonah. Jonah 4. To Jonah, this seemed very wrong, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord. Isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? That is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me to die than to live. Don't do that to yourself. You're better than that. Don't be Jonah. Let me pray. Heavenly Father God, thank you for your compassion on us. Thank you for just the description, even alone, of the fact that you are slow to anger, that you do not come down on us hard, but you are fully committed to us. You care about us in ways that we will never unpack and understand to its deepest and fullest potential, God, because you are bigger and greater than we could ever comprehend. God, I pray for the journey of everybody here. I pray that they continue on. I pray that they have life-changing experiences in you. And I pray for soft hearts to receive all you have for them. And pray this in your precious name. Amen.